This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hi, I'm Paul Cherry, and this is The Dark North, Gangs of Montreal. In today's episode, we're going to look at a group of gangs that has often been dismissed as small players in Montreal's underworld. They are the city street gangs. Most of them started out in the late 1980s in different neighborhoods around the city. They work with other criminal gangs to traffic drugs, weapons, and sex. They recruit girls from youth protection centers and force them to work as dancers in Quebec bars, escorts during Montreal's Grand Prix race weekend, and highly paid prostitutes in the United States. As he was being extradited to the U.S. on racketeering charges in 2006, Montreal Mafia boss Vito Rizzuto warned the police that street gangs were going to become a force to be reckoned with, a prediction that seems to have come true. We hope you're enjoying The Dark North. Please tell your friends and family about us and subscribe to us wherever you are listening today.
Pimping and fraud have become two very profitable options, very lucrative and harder to investigate.
The mafia didn't associate with the street gangs then. At that time, the gangs were considered low-level criminals. For the mafia, they weren't at their level. They let the bikers handle them.
Grégory Wooley, he was one of the pioneers, if I can say that, of the street gangs, you know?
Many immigrants who move to Montreal find themselves settling in the city's north end. Rents are cheaper. There are many immigrant communities already established in places like Saint-Michel, Montreal North, Pierrefonds. And it's in those neighborhoods where some of Montreal's most notorious street gangs were born. In the late 1980s, thousands of Haitian immigrants fled the social unrest in their home country, unleashed by a dictator named Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier. But their new life in Montreal wasn't easy. Many faced racism, a lack of employment, discrimination, and their children struggled to integrate in the local elementary and high schools. René-André Brisebois is a criminologist who studies Montreal street gangs. He teaches a course about street gangs at the Université de Montréal.
They went to high school and faced a lot of discrimination and racism from the population, which was mainly white Quebecers there. Quickly, they learned to band together to defend themselves against that racism and discrimination. You know, their strength in numbers. And by uniting, they saw that, oh, we're in a position of power, and we can earn and force respect.
Beauvoir Jean started a street gang that was called Master B. He wrote a book about his life, and in it described why kids started joining together in gangs. If they treat you like a baboon or a monkey, you have several options. You can act like a baboon, drown your adversaries in insults, keep on going, or fight, he wrote. How you react depends on how many people are calling you that. Do you have to pass them every time you go to school or the DPNR? Do you feel like the people that could help you aren't helping? Then, Jean wrote, you create a street gang, and it works. No one will call you a baboon again. Small gangs began to emerge in different parts of Montreal. Some would eventually identify themselves as Crips or Bloods, imitating American gangs. There were the Boga, the K's Breeze, the 67s, the Crackdown Posse, the Rough Riders, the Walkley Crew, Burgundy Massive, and the Dope Squad.
For those young Haitians who immigrated, who moved here, whether they wanted to or not, they had to deal with the values their family tried to teach them. And they're confronted with the reality of the values in Quebec, the society that they're living in. But they don't recognize themselves in either of them.
Mahad Al Mastukrim was 10 years old when his family moved from Somalia to Montreal's West Island. The majority of people in the neighborhood he lived in were immigrants. Even as a kid, he said, he felt alienated.
I always felt like a suspect, even though we were not doing nothing. Young age, I was just like, example, we were just kids that were going to school and playing sport and hanging together, you know? We always felt like we, since young age, before we went into gangs, that police and already target us as gangsters, you know?
He wasn't interested in school and dropped out at 16 years old. Then he joined a blues-affiliated gang called the Street Gangsters.
I was raised with a big family, you know, 10, and a single mother. My father was not involved in my life. So me as the oldest kid, I always felt like I had to help my mother, you know, especially like when it comes to financial. I was looking for like a father figure that I didn't have. So I went to see the older guys and they started helping me making money.
He left the gang after he was shot by a rival gang member. Back in the 1980s, street gangs were committing small-time crimes, like taxing other kids, stealing things like their bus passes or cell phones, and dealing drugs like pot and crack. But there were rivalries between the two main gangs, the Boga and the Crackdown Posse. The Boga were called the Reds, and the Crackdown Posse were the Blues. The two gangs waged a bloody war against each other, mainly on the streets of Montreal's North and East Ends. André Bouchard was the head of the Montreal Police Homicide Squad. He said, like the early days of the biker gangs in Quebec in the 1970s, the street gangs were undisciplined. Motives behind street gang-related homicides often made no sense.
It's not organized crime, it's disorganized crime. They don't even know what they're doing. They go on buses and you're wearing a blue toque and they shoot you, you know? And they can't even shoot straight. That's why they're not killing them. They're hurting them, but they're not killing anybody.
But with time, the street gangs started to become more organized. Maria Morani is a Montreal criminologist who has studied Montreal street gangs since the 1990s.
Puis à cette époque, la police avait tendance à dire...
At that time, the police tended to say, it's just kids being annoying. We're not taking that really seriously. But at a certain point, things evolved in the 1990s, where they went from machetes to sawed-off shotguns to handguns. They went from pot to crack. We saw a kind of increase even in their organization. People say street gangs weren't organized. That's not true. They had their own organizations, a little bit like terrorist cells. They were in small groups, which were autonomous. They didn't have a hierarchy like the bikers, with hang-arounds, prospects, etc.
C'est une organisation que moi j'ai constaté cellulaire.
The street gangs began to make connections with other organized crime groups and to expand their criminal activities. They started to work closely with the bikers, and that led to prostitution.
Et c'est les motards qui les fournissaient en drogue dure.
It was the bikers that supplied them with hard drugs, that gave them weapons. At that time, the gangs themselves weren't pimping. The bikers asked them to recruit girls for their strip clubs and for their escort agencies at that time. The young people, 12, 13, 14, even 16 years old, they recruited at school. They recruited wherever, parks, etc. But at that time, they didn't have the prostitution structure, like bars and escort agencies. They didn't know that they could send girls across Canada and even to the U.S. So they recruited girls for the bikers. They gave them to the bikers.
The street gangs targeted girls and young women, particularly girls who ran away from youth protection centers and group homes. Some of their victims were as young as 14 years old, forced to work as strippers in bars across Quebec.
Street gangs have understood that to avoid attracting police attention, there are some crimes that are more profitable than others. Even if drugs are very, very, very lucrative, the risk of being caught is also very high. Pimping and fraud have become two very profitable options, very lucrative and harder to investigate.
Prostitution is harder to investigate because it's not easy for police to get girls to file complaints and testify against their pimps. That's because pimps often lure girls in by pretending to be their boyfriends. In 1990, Montreal police arrested 100 street gang members. 48 teenage girls they had forced into prostitution agreed to testify against street gang members in court. A 15-year-old girl said two gang members talked to her at a disco for teenagers in Laval. They asked her to work for them. When she refused, the two men took her to the back of the club and took turns raping her at knife point. Police said up to 300 people were involved in that prostitution ring. While the street gangs were working with the bikers, they had little direct contact with other criminal gangs like the Montreal Mafia.
Mais à cette époque, la mafia faisait...
The mafia didn't associate with the street gangs then. At that time, the gangs were considered low-level criminals. For the mafia, they weren't at their level. They let the bikers handle them. They didn't respect codes. They were hot-headed. We don't do business with them. On wiretaps, you heard certain members of the mafia making racist remarks about them. There was racism there, it's clear.
But the mafia was at the top of the criminal underworld in Montreal, and something for people in street gangs to aspire to. They were ambitious. Morani says that even as they did dirty work for the biker gangs, street gang members told her it wouldn't be like that forever.
And on the ground, they would tell me, yes, Maria, for now it's like that. But we will eventually work for ourselves, not for the bikers. And when I asked them, who are the women and men that you respect? Well, at that time, it wasn't the rappers. It was the godfather of the mafia. It was funny to hear these gang youths saying, one day I'll be the godfather. And I would say, but you're not Italian. You'll never become the godfather. And they said, no, you don't understand. One day we won't need anyone. One day we'll dominate the criminal world.
At the beginning of the 1990s, the gang's connections with the bikers drew them into a violent war that rocked Quebec for more than a decade. Our next episode will look at that biker war. Hundreds of people were killed or injured as the Hells Angels tried to take over Montreal's lucrative drug trade. The Hells Angels took on a rival gang, the Rock Machine, and a group of drug smugglers affiliated with them. They called themselves the Alliance. Among the street gangs, members chose sides.
At that time, it was the war between the Rock Machine and the Hells. Each side had chosen their camp. The Blues were with the Hells, the Reds with the Rock Machine, and then later with the Bandidos.
Two leaders of the Master B gang, Rochefort Joseph and Gregory Woolley, sided with the Hells Angels. Some other Master B members joined the Palmers, a gang that became part of the Alliance. Maurice Mambouchet was the leader of the Hells Angels. He set up a gang called the Rockers. Its job was to take all the risks for the Hells, beating and even killing rival drug dealers. Gregory Woolley, the former leader of the Master B Street Gang, joined the Rockers in 1997. He had been making a name for himself as Mambouchet's bodyguard. He was also in charge of expanding the Hells' control of drug deals in downtown bars.
Gregory Woolley, he was one of the pioneers, if I can say that, of the street gangs, you know.
André Sedelo covered organized crime for the Montreal newspaper La Presse.
In the street gang, there's not a lot of them who continue, who made a career. You have to be a star, you know, in the street gang if you want to continue. And you have to be intelligent, you have to be wise guys like Gregory Woolley.
Woolley had already served jail time before he joined the Rockers. In 1994 and 1995, he bounced in and out of jail for a series of crimes that included theft, possession of stolen property, and being an accessory to an armed robbery. In 1998, at a party at an Italian restaurant, Woolley became a full-patch member of the Rockers. That happened after he was acquitted of killing a drug dealer who worked for the Rock Machine. Woolley could never become a Hell's Angel. The biker gang had a rule that no black men could join. Police believe that had it not been for that, Woolley would have been a full-patch Hell's Angel.
I think the saddest thing for Mambouchet was to not be able to make him a full-patch because he was black. It wasn't allowed by the charter.
But in 1998, Woolley was allowed to form his own gang. He called it the Syndicate, and its job was to take over drug trafficking in the north end of the city for the Hells. Woolley reached out to his old street gang contacts and recruited them to join him.
Woolley was a very, very good soldier. Loyal, he could do dirty jobs no problem. So he created his own organization, which was a bridge between the gangs and the bikers.
At first, gang members thought Woolley and his new gang would take street gangs to new levels of criminal power in Montreal. But the syndicate caused problems for street gangs.
Sur le terrain, les gars de gang.
For the street gangs, syndicate was a nightmare. They didn't like syndicate. You might expect that the gangs would be good friends with Syndicate, but no, not at all. When the gangs talk about Syndicate, you know, we don't work for them. But for many years, Syndicate controlled the street gangs. The gangs did not at all appreciate Syndicate. They didn't think it was a real gang. They thought they just worked for the bikers, and they didn't respect them.
Willie's new gang destabilized the street gangs. The creation of the Syndicate was blamed for an outbreak of violence in North End, Montreal, during the summer of the year 2000. It was the Boga against the Crackdown Posse, or the Blues versus the Reds. It started in April 2000, when a 19-year-old man was killed in a drive-by shooting in St. Neil. 2 months later, Okinson Chal, a leader of the Boga, was killed in a Montreal North parking lot. The very next day, in what appeared to be a retaliation for killing Chal, a 20-year-old man was shot while he stood on an apartment building balcony in St. Michel. There were at least 6 other attempted murders in the gang war that year. Shortly after he started the Syndicate, Willie was back in jail. He spent most of the early 2000s behind bars for trying to sneak a gun onto a plane, for gangsterism, and conspiracy to commit murder. While he was in jail, he met Montreal mob boss Vito Rizzuto. The two men became close. They were often seen together when they were allowed to take walks outside in the prison yard. That connection gave Willie even more credibility in Montreal's underworld. In 2001, Quebec police cracked down on the Hells Angels in a province-wide investigation that put almost every biker here in jail. It was called Operation Springtime 2001, and it created a void in Montreal's underworld that other gangs tried to fill, especially the street gangs. Here's René-André Brisebois.
I compare criminal organizations to a game of chess. Each criminal organization has a role to play on the criminal chessboard, and they have to work together if they want to maximize their profits and reduce their risk of being arrested. That's a bit what we saw with the massive arrest of the Hells. The street gangs played a bigger role, knowing the Hells would eventually come out, but they made alliances with the mafia too, to maximize the amount of money everyone was making.
The street gangs were making money selling drugs like pot and crack. They were accused of forcing recruits to perform initiations like assaulting people. In 2001, a suit salesman died after being beaten up in what police said was possibly a gang initiation. They continued recruiting underage girls for prostitution. And throughout the first half of the 2000s, the Boga and the CDP kept fighting. In the year 2005 alone, police said 3 murders, 51 attempted murders, and 80 armed assaults were linked to Montreal street gangs. By 2006, the conflict between the rival street gangs had gotten so violent and was so widespread that Montreal police said street gangs were their number one crime-fighting priority. There were 20 major street gangs in Montreal, with between 350 and 500 members. The street gangs were fighting over drug turf, but the motives behind much of the violence was often frivolous. Sometimes something as banal as an insult could provoke a murder. That's the same year Vito Rizzuto warned the police to keep an eye on street gangs. Police stepped up pressure on the gangs, but Gregory Woolley intervened. He told both sides, blue and red, that they'd be better off working together than fighting each other. It was Vito Rizzuto's way of doing business. But some street gang leaders didn't care. In 2012, Chenier Dupuis, the leader of the Boga, was shot and killed in the parking lot at the Galerie d'Anjou, a shopping center in Montreal's East End. Another gang member with him was also shot and ran for cover in a nearby restaurant. Then, the cousin of one of the leaders of a gang tied to the Blues was shot and killed during a party in a bar on downtown Park Avenue. There were hundreds of people at the bar, including people from rival gangs. Police believe the shooters were linked to the Reds. Gangs were also involved in other crimes. Members of a street gang swarmed a store in Saint Laurent, spraying the clerks with pepper spray as they stole coats and jackets from the business. Others set fire to a funeral home owned by the Montreal Mafia's Rizzuto family during a struggle for control of the mob. Even though Montreal has seen many shootings that police say are tied to street gang rivalries, experts say they often work together.
On va parfois trouver des groupes, des bleus et puis des rouges.
Before, you couldn't go out on the street without being stabbed because you were wearing a red scarf or a blue cap. Over the past 10 years, you see reds doing business with blues. Some don't even have colors. What matters is money.
Mais actuellement, maintenant,
prostitution still makes up a large part of their criminal enterprise.
Dans les agences d'escorte maintenant avec l'internet,
in the escort agencies with the internet, it's a free-for-all. It's a true open market. They'll rent a hotel room. It could be a seedy hotel or a deluxe one. Girls from Quebec will go to Niagara, Toronto, Vancouver, Miami. They'll go to New York. They move. It's very easy. Girls will go to Toronto, for example. There's a deluxe hotel waiting for them. They get to the hotel. When they get there, they have 15 clients per day. The girls tell me they can do as much as $15,000 in 1 week.
En une semaine.
In 2015, Gregory Woolley made headlines in Montreal when police arrested him and accused him of being one of the three leaders of organized crime in the city. Police said the mafia, Hell's Angels, and street gangs were working together to sell drugs. Last year, Woolley was sent to jail for 8 years after he pleaded guilty to charges of gangsterism and drug trafficking.
Gregory Woolley, when he was arrested many times, and he got in jail many times, then inside he was considered like a king. You know, he was not a reject. He was close to mafia. He was close to other bikers. He was close to the street gang. The force of a guy in the underworld is the same than in business. You know. Your contacts, if you have contacts, you're solid, you're wise, you can go on.
Woolley was arrested with 48 other people, including Vito Rizzuto's son, Leonardo, and Stefano Sollicito. At the time, police said Rizzuto and Sollicito were leading the Montreal Mafia. The two men were later acquitted on all charges. Perhaps the most surprising thing about those arrests was the way police described what Woolley had been doing. Acting as a liaison between the mafia, the bikers, and street gangs. Police described him as a cornerstone of organized crime. A street gang leader who was so important in the criminal underworld that he was working hand in hand with the leaders of the mafia. Speaking of the bikers, it's time to take a closer look at the biker war that dominated Quebec's criminal underworld for more than a decade. In the early 1990s, a charismatic biker named Maurice Mambouchet took over the gang. His dream of controlling drug trafficking in Montreal led to the murders of more than 100 people, an attack on Quebec's justice system, and an overhaul of crime laws that changed the way mafia, bikers, and street gangs operate here. Next time on Gangs of Montreal.
The Hells Angels, they want to take control of all the drug trafficking, you know, on the street. Because at that time, the Hells Angels, they had control in regionally, but not in Montreal, on the Montreal Island and around Montreal. Then they decide to fight the Rock Machine, because the Rock Machine, they were controlling downtown Montreal. We can imagine that it's the most... The most lucrative territory, then the Hells Angels want to get it.
But the real war in Montreal, it started by guys, especially Maurice Boucher, that wanted to control everything. He was a kind of egomaniac. That's why he's still in jail and probably will die there.
He'd still be out there if he wouldn't have started this war. Because the government would have never attacked, Kakashu would have never existed, the bombs would have not gone off if he had used his head.
The Dark North, Gangs of Montreal, is written and produced by Monique Baudin and me, Paul Cherry. Additional production and editing by Carson Jarama. Theme music is by Bryce Hall. Emma Mackay is the Montreal Gazette's digital executive producer, and Lucinda Choden is our editor-in-chief. Thanks for this episode to Rene Broomer and David Rudin. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.